Last thing I want to ask you about is adjuvant Herceptin. And not so much to get into the details about the data, because we've done that a lot on this series.
Right.
But I'm just curious what it was like for you personally, being such a key part of the NSABP, you know, see this evolve over the last year, particularly when the data broke.
Well, it was certainly very exciting. And it was exciting at the level of having accomplished something important as a cooperative group. But it was also very exciting to think about the patients that had been put on the Herceptin arm, those patients who were on the control arm who were going to get Herceptin now and probably derive almost as much benefit, and to take a group of patients that we knew had a really degraded or inferior prognosis compared to their HER2 negative colleagues or other patients, and be able to bring their level of outcome and disease-free survival up to a level that was really the same as women who didn't have this bad marker. It was pretty gratifying.
I'm curious sort of what the response has been within the group. Is it something that's kind of motivating people and been a big part of the psyche of the NSABP at this point?
I think it certainly was a morale booster. You know, as the first biologic that we really had tested in a big trial, I think it certainly encouraged us to press ahead with some of the other growth factor inhibitors and monoclonal antibodies and small molecules that attack the biologic targets that we're beginning to learn about. I think the most important aspect, and what I talk about with students and residents about the Herceptin trials, not ours and the others, is that it's a fantastic validation of the scientific method. I mean, this is a cell surface receptor described in basic science studies in the test tube 25 years ago, and that was followed doggedly through the in vitro studies into animal studies, understanding the translational importance that it was a prognostic marker in women with breast cancer, making an antibody to this receptor, humanizing it and making it a clinical drug, studying it in advanced disease, and finally bringing it to the adjuvant setting, a process that took 25 years. But that's how it works. And in this instance, it worked. Now, a lot of drugs, a lot of concepts die on the way through this process, but you have to follow through. And I think it's a terrific vindication of the scientific clinical trials process.
I think it's also a terrific vindication of the whole concept of randomized trials that the NSABP and Bernie Fisher has been so strong and taken such a leadership role over decades. And this is a prime example of, theoretically, maybe it should have been a really difficult trial to pull off. I mean, you had an agent that looked very promising, and if we weren't so committed to the randomized trial method, I could have seen another high-dose chemotherapy and bone marrow transplant scenario when everybody just went out and did it. And yet our patterns of care studies of oncologists consistently showed that right up until the date that that data broke, they were not putting patients on Herceptin who weren't on trials.
Interesting. Well, I mean, people do jump ahead of the trials.
But they didn't in this situation.
Yeah, there's so many examples, and I don't want to point to anybody and necessarily embarrass anyone, but there's so many examples of really strong retrospective comparison data or data showing promising new drug compared to historical controls that really, really look like it's a sure bet that when they're subjected to randomized trials, just don't make it. Why that happens, we don't understand. I think what it tells us is we don't know everything. No matter how well we balance groups of patients for the factors we know influence their outcomes, we don't know all those factors. And until you do a randomized trial, you can't tout or claim that a drug or a treatment has benefit.